you know, the millennial wants to know the why and the end picture. And sometimes that seems kind of as entitlement. And the, you know, what do you need to know? Just do kind of put your head down and work, you know, because that's how we've been kind of trained and grown up. But they've been given information at, so early, right in the palm of their hands, that for them, they need to see that end to understand where they're building towards. And that can come across as entitlement.
But wait, there is more. Yes. There is more, because you're going to hear me today as I drill down in asking these tough questions as far as when, where, how. All of this is going to be unpacked today as you listen to your delightful host, the great interviewer himself, the one who is able to drill deep and ask the right questions. Because not everybody can do this, only your trained and extremely talented and delightful podcast host like myself can do. And that's why you're going to stay tuned, because you're going to get what it is you come from. Yes, my friend. Yes, my friend.
My friend, my friend, my friend. We did a street job.
Oh, yeah. So we are going to dig into that, and you're going to hear more of that. So stay tuned. Make sure that you're strapped in as we get ready for blast off. So here we go.
Welcome to the Kingsley Grant Show, the podcast dedicated to helping you become the leader everyone loves and wants to follow. Kingsley believes his leadership paradigm, Emotelligence, the art of succeeding where others failed, is the key to achieving this status. On this show, Kingsley guides you through the uncharted waters of emotional intelligence and leadership essentials, with the guarantee that upon exit, you will become more skilled in relationship management, decision-making, and job performance. Now here's your host, your coach, and your Sherpa, Kingsley Grant.
Here we go, here we go, here we go. This is your boy, Kingsley Grant, sitting behind the Jamaican microphone, bringing you yet another show. And it is from the show that's been voted number 3 on the top 15 podcasts on emotional intelligence by FeedSpot. And so I am excited that you are listening to one of the top shows right now. And I'm in the command center of the Emotelligent Leadership Institute, where I'm going to dig into the vault and get today's show so that what you've come for, you will have. So let me reach in right here and get today's show. There it is. I got it. And put it down right here. And now we can dive into today's show. And today we are going to take a special angle to our show. It's one that I have not done before, and for a number of reasons, but I'm going to see if you can discover why this one took this long basically to do. Because our guest today is going to break down through a lens of leadership and the millennial mindset in leadership, because that is really what's happening in our world today. But there's sometimes it creates tension. It is misunderstood because, number one, they're seen as young, brash, arrogant, resistant, rebellious, all those different terms, which is really unfair, because that person can bring to the table some really, really incredible contribution to make the workplace really a better place, more engaged and increase in retention, right? Lower toxicity if it's managed well. And that's what Sahar, our guest today, is going to bring our way. And I don't want to rain on her parade, because I'm telling you, she is going to blow your mind with some of her phraseology, some terms. Let me give you one, for example. Is she talks about idea that of ration your passion. That's only one thing. There's more to come. But hey, I'm not going to rain on her parade, as I mentioned. So you have to listen in. And by the way, if this is your first time with us on the show, thank you for being here. I truly, truly appreciate you finding us. And you could not have found us than this time, at a better time, because the show of what our guests will present. If this is your second, third, fourth, fifth, and umpteenth time, thank you from the bottom of my heart. I do appreciate that, because you make this show what it is, and the show's success today is a result of you listening, sharing, and reviewing on the podcast at Apple Podcasts. Really is what's driving this success of the show. So thank you so very much. And once again, this show is being brought to you by Kingspire Communication, where we help leaders get better results, higher retention, increased retention, higher productivity, higher engagement, right? And lower toxicity. That's what happens. And if you want to know more about how we could bring that to your place, go over to kingsleygrant.com, KingsleyGrant.com, and connect with us. And let's see if we are a right fit and can bring in coaching, speaking, and or consulting to your organization, or all of the above. How about that? So my friend, without further ado, let us then bring our guest on. Would you put your hands together and help me welcome to the show, Miss Sahar Pack. Thank you for joining me on the Kingsley Grant Show, where emotional intelligence and leadership skills intersect. This show is designed for leaders who want to know what works and what doesn't work in today's workplace. We have a special guest on the show today. Her name is Sahar Paz. Let me tell you a few things about Sahar, and we'll fill in the rest as we go. Sahar is a CEO of Own Your Voice Strategy Firm, a personal branding agency. Her mission is to champion the voice of others to help them understand their emotional intelligence and find their best voices within. She is the author of Find Your Voice, which is a part memoir and part cognitive behavioral guide. Sahar has spoken to a wide audience of leaders and other professionals at organizations such as HBO, Facebook, Whole Foods, and the Texas Medical Center, just to name a few. You can find Sahar on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Sahar Paz, S-A-H-A-R-P-A-Z. Sahar, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I am doing so well and so grateful for you, Mr. Kingsley, for having me and others and talking about leadership and emotional intelligence. So I am excited to be here, sir.
Awesome. But I'm so happy that you joined us and grace us with your presence. So where in the world is Sahar today?
Sahar is showing up with a big grateful heart from Houston, Texas, right in the middle of America, the most diverse city in the United States, with a lot of delicious food.
Awesome. Well, suppose someone came to that region of the world in Dallas, Texas, Sahar. What would be a must-see or a must-do and a must-taste that you would have to let them know about?
Well, when you come to Houston, there is a beautiful park downtown called Discovery Green, and there's usually different art installations. And I think in the age of pandemic, it's important to know, hey, where can I go outside to keep myself and my family safe? So Discovery Green is really good for all ages. There's always a playground and some sort of art installation, and you can walk around and bring your food, and there's places to sit even by water. So there in that area is lovely, and to eat, there's a place called Phoenicia, and it's Mediterranean based, and actually there's one near Discovery Green, and there's another one in the loop, as we call it here, and it's just a beautiful array of all kinds of food, from vegetarian to not, and with delicious spices. So Discovery Green and Phoenicia would be my answers.
Well, thank you so much. You did a great job. I think that you have kind of, the way you presented is almost like you could be the spokesperson and the face of Discover Green and Phoenicia.
Hey, they should make sure they,
hey, give them a bill and invoice them for this introduction you gave them just now. So one of those things I find, Sahar, is that when it comes to even planning out and strategizing for, even so you could mention Discover Green and Phoenicia, there's some planning that has to go in place. Someone had to somehow think about these things and strategically place them so that others can enjoy them. So I call that and see it as leadership at work. So when you hear the word leadership or the word leader, what comes to your mind?
Bringing the best out of others, you know, being kind of the conductor of an orchestra, allowing them to know this is where we're headed, this is the big piece of music we want to make, and this is how each of you play a role. And you have a lane of genius, and each of you are as individually important. So a leader, you know, is able to look at everyone on their team eye to eye and understand their strengths and have the ability to bring everybody out together to make a great piece of work.
You know, I love that framing of the word of the orchestra idea, because it's very visual, right? We can see somebody conducting and leading and getting everybody on the same, harmonizing all of that piece and all of that, the work that goes in. But I'm also hearing that you're addressing the fact of making it not just about a group of people, but individually how they all fit and knowing their strengths and all of those different things. I think I love the idea of an orchestra describing, right, what leadership comes to your mind. And what is it that led you to possibly think of leadership in that manner as a team, but also as an orchestra kind of at work?
I think from my own experience and having to, you know, at the age of 17, I was managing a retail store in Denver, Colorado, where I grew up, and it was called Rave. So before there was a Forever 21, there was a Rave. And, you know, I had a really strong work ethic that allowed me to be in that position at a young age. And I had folks that were older than me, younger than me, same age as me. And I had to really, I couldn't lead them all the same way. I couldn't schedule them all the same way. Some of them had school, some of them had kids. So it was very much an individual type thing. And for me, I always either look at it as an orchestra conductor or a director of a movie, because I'm like, okay, what settings? You have a lot of different people who have very distinct roles, very distinct personalities that come together to create one body of work. So I am left and right brains, and, you know, so anyone who's managed me knows, hey, I need to give it to her visual as well as in a bullet point list.
So, I mean, one thing that's very interesting, Sahar, is that you describe being a leader at such a young age, right? And so there are two things that tend to work in the world of leadership that probably were at odds against you. Number one, your age, but number two, being a female, right? So my question is, how did you navigate that with people who were possibly have this mindset about what leaders should be? Number one, most people think, well, they hear leader, oh, male, right? Which I get it, which is the dominant idea. But also the fact that, you know, they hear older person, leader. So in that stage of life and age and being a female, what was that like for you? Is there, what's the most challenging part of that? And how did you navigate that?
Yeah, from retail management, I actually went into finance. So really talking about the male dominant industry and navigating that. And it comes back to who I am as a human. And I'm a product of a revolution. I was born in Tehran in 1978. So seeing and witnessing the first 7 years of my life, how options were taken away from both the woman and the men, really at first put a fire in my heart, which was kind of not good because it was filled with anger and why and all of that. And I learned how to make that fire momentum rather than anger. And from that came this young woman who worked her tushy off. And I think in some instances, my work really spoke for itself. In other instances, that fire that gave me momentum, you know, I didn't know how to ration my passion. So a lot of times, like Sheryl Sandberg wrote years ago, you have to lean in, you know. Mm-hmm. For me, I had two elbows on the table, you know, and I was just going hard. And that wasn't strategic. We all know that you have to play chess, not checkers. And and I was just wanting to hop over and make a point about women empowerment and women being heard. So I didn't maneuver it with that much grace. I wasn't ever disrespectful. But, you know, I did bring up reflective points. That tends to be, you know, I'm a Libra and want to know both sides. And so I would question. I would mostly question. So I could see that being seen as pushback. And I had some good leaders and I had some not so good leaders. I had a lot of times where I questioned myself. But I'm so thankful for really the turbulence I saw and experienced the first 7 years of my life, because I understand what a privilege it is to even get that job, to even be in that room. And that comes with a responsibility. And I think, you know, that fire mixed with this is my responsibility. Like, there's a lot of other women that are not here, and I am. So let me talk and speak up for all of them.
That's really interesting. I think I like that angle, because you had to, like you mentioned, ration your passion as a phrase you use, play chess and not checkers, which is really a idea of self-awareness, is knowing, you know, where you are. I mean, being able to identify those pieces. So I want to ask a question that maybe, you know, because you had to then take to the what you've brought in the background, the backdrop of what you came through. But I wonder, who would you say with the person that you may have looked up to that kind of allowed you to even pull back some, right, and to manage those emotions the way you did? Is there a person that you would say truly emulated that for you, that model of that, where you would say that person influenced or impacted your life in such a way that if you had to give a trophy or an award, that person would be the one, and why?
One, Mr. Kingsley, I just really want to shout out that through what I just said, you can really spot the self-awareness. You know, that's you, like, really stepping into your mastery. So everybody who's listening to Mr. Kingsley, shout out. He is understands self-awareness. And, you know, I know that this isn't going to directly answer your question, but I think a lot of what drove me was the lack of not having that person I could give a trophy to. I couldn't Google, or, you know, even at that time, there wasn't really, like, Google didn't exist right. that much, but there weren't books or people that of women that, you know, looked like me or didn't. It was so male dominant. So for me, it was this list of, I know this is what I don't want to be, you know, and it's them acting kind of from what they've been programmed, whether it is not to pay attention to the young girl or to come from a place of bias and not hire the beautiful brown and black folks, you know. So for me, it was these things that I wanted to work against. And so now, later in life, probably I could say that I would give an award to a woman that I met later. I met at 30, and her name is Kimberly Lee Miner, and she was a manager that I almost worked for. The day before I was supposed to start, my job got dissolved because it was the 2008 economic collapse. I was in New York at the time. But she was a manager that I was hired to work under, and I just really appreciated, you know, coming back to the sentiment of what does leadership mean to me. She wanted to bring the best out of me. She challenged me. She, you know, really looked at how I needed to be communicated to and presented that to me so I could produce the best work. You know, in the times of retail management and finance, I didn't have anyone. But fast forward 7 years later, and I had Kimberly Lee Miner.
You know, and sometimes that is where we find that individual Sahar, because, you know, what you're describing is how the things that made you who you are, right? Your upbringing, the systems that you realize you don't want to necessarily have as a part of your own narrative for your life, and you decided to do some things differently. So that kind of shaped you, and then it leads you to a Kimberly who you identify as somebody who has some traits that you kind of admired, right? And so I really like the fact that you were able to get to that point. And somehow about what she did and what she represented was such where you decided, you know, that person may be someone who is worth emulating. So here's what I find, Sahari, that as a backdrop, in the workplace, going back to what you were saying earlier, your age, stage of life and being a female. And sometimes you have the pushback, which can sometimes create a sense of tension, right? The tension, and which I like the fact that you were able to be aware of that and then begin to adjust and be flexible and modify to get yourself through that. But sometimes it can create where the notion of a younger person, a millennial, for example, leading, people can immediately, without any reason given to them, have a resistance to that. What would you say to a millennial type who's leading an organization or a you know department and is feeling as if they can't make a headway because immediately because of who they are, their stage of life, they're experiencing this resistance already? What would you say to that person to find a way, how can they navigate, find their own voice within to make sure that they're creating their own path?
I love that you brought this up. You know, in my, I'm Gen X, so I'm creeping on 42 in a couple weeks. And for me, I feel like I'm in the bridge where, you know, I understand the digital and the analog. I also mm-hmm. understand the different cycles that we've broken through as women and people of color. And I see, and a lot of my leadership coaching is that, you know, the millennial wants to know the why and the end picture. And sometimes that seems kind of as entitlement in the way, you know, what do you need to know? Just do kind of put your head down and work, you know, because that's how we've been kind of trained and grown up. But they've been given information at, so early, right in the palm of their hands, that for them, they need to see that end to understand where they're building towards. And that can come across as entitlement. That's one thing. And then also they have a lot less baggage. So this notion of, you know, find your voice and go use it and be a leader. You know, I experienced this when I published my book, Find Your Voice, and I went to speak at different conferences. And the women, you know, at that time I was in my mid-30s. And so the women that were older than me did have a hard time because it's saying, well, what does this say about me if someone younger than me is there? So there is that little bit of ego that can create that static. And so as a young person, you know, go back to playing chess and realize that, you know, it is a privilege to not have the baggage and to be able to really own your voice and speak up for what you believe in. But also realize that sometimes that comes across as entitlement, that comes across as bullying. And just speaking for it to be heard and going over people's heads is not playing chess, it's playing checkers. That's not conscious leadership. And I think the millennials have come around and want to bring this awareness into all kinds of systems. So I ask them to be aware of their own actions. And yes, you're empowered. And yes, you have a big banging voice. But you got to make sure that it lands with everyone in the room to create the biggest impact. And, you know, I had one specific consulting situation where two millennials kept going over the director's head and also around the company versus talking just up to their direct manager. Mm-hmm. And this was what I really saw. It was interesting because that direct manager was constantly told by HR and the CEO to be a good girl, sit down. Don't talk about it. And she was trying to be logical. She's Gen X, coming from a sage place. And she was constantly told to be quiet. Meanwhile, the millennials were empowered and finding their voice. And because it was an area that they wanted to fix, which really had to do with the CEO at the top, right? So it caused this really bad dynamic of bullying. And this is where an empowered millennial unknowingly becomes a bully. Mm-hmm. And I know that this is not the generation that wants to be bullies. This is the generation of conscious leaders.
And when they're in that frame of mind and they unconsciously become this or unknowingly become this bully, because of there's some arrogance that comes through as well, right? So they're going back to recognizing, understanding, and manage your emotions is so critical for this aspect of leadership. What might that look like? How does that show up in the workplace where people can say, because sometimes they may not even realize they're bullying, right, and trying to bully in their way to what they want to get to. How would that show up? And if people recognize that, and even that person themselves may be able to say, hey, maybe I'm bullying and not even knowing it. What might some of those things that descriptors we could look for?
You know, when I said I didn't know how to ration my passion, I was just kind of speaking and spewing to whoever could be heard. And I'll say that if you are feeling that you want to be heard or create change within your job or within your community anywhere, go directly to the person. Mm-hmm. Don't go above and around. Go directly mm-hmm. with that person, because that, you know, going above that person's head or going around, one, creates more drama. Two, it creates gossip. Three, you're not really getting the things done. And, you know, millennials want to know that end game and want to know the why so they could do the building blocks. Sometimes that's just a little too logical. We need to bring that emotional intelligence into it and understand that these people that are in these positions have had some experience. They have done this before. And let's, you know, ask them questions mm-hmm. and make this a two-way conversation. So mm-hmm. my first thing is, hey, millennials, I want you to be heard, but make sure that you're going to the direct person and having a really honest conversation. Make sure that you're asking questions as much as you are signifying what you feel and what you see. Because in this space, you know, the pushback is good. That's where innovation mm-hmm. comes from.
Yeah.
Right? But it's also being able to listen. It's also being able to drive the best out of your others. And one thing that I will say is that millennials are looking to be mentored, but because of this big, bold voice, they kind of block themselves and other people don't want to. So there is this wanting. And mentors, we can stay, you know, hip to the game. I know I am as Gen X. Like, okay, tell me what's the newest app? You know, what are the newest hashtags, especially working in marketing and branding? So there should be a two-way once we get kind of past our different communication, you know, adaptabilities. One, mm-hmm. like, quick hint. Millennials, when they are constructively thinking, they look down, right? Gen X, I was brought up on eye contact,
yes.
eye contact.
Yes.
Right? Baby boomers is the shift, this good handshake, you know, make it a stiff one, make, you know. So everybody has a different way of like thinking and expressing who they are. And we think, oh my God, you're just tuning me out again, you damn millennial, you know. And Gen Z, man, Gen Z is, they're growing up, at least in the U.S., with having to go through shooting drills. Guess who that's going to make them like? The baby boomers who had to prepare for the, you know, the bombing drills as well. So that's going to be not as big as a risk taker, way more savings. So it's really, it's interesting. But I'll say the younger we get, the less baggage we have. We can come across too empowered. And what we need to do is blend in emotional intelligence.
And I think that is, I'm glad that you painted that picture. And I love the framing of that, Sahara, because I think it gives us an idea, especially the millennial, that, hey, okay, we know you have a voice, we know you're loud, we know you want to be heard, we know all these different things, but you have to also understand that you got to tame that, temper that, because you're not just an individual, you're a team, like you said earlier, the orchestra playing, right? You have to blend your own kind of music and the talent with others who are around you is important. So I find sometimes the CEO type, those who are on top, when they see that, sometimes you fear what you don't know. And because they see this empowered kind of, you know, they may call it arrogancy or rebellious type, because they don't really know what happens. So they also need to find a way to that upper echelon to somehow look at that and see it as maybe something constructive or healthy or helpful. What would you say to that person then, that CEO type, what they can do also emotionally, intelligently, to moderate and their own emotions and be able to find what might be behind that could be helpful for the organization? How could they approach that?
I love creating an innovation task force. You know, millennials have an appetite to learn and produce and innovate and think about ideas. And it's about saying, hey, there's no bad ideas. Let's put them up on the wall. Mm-hmm. So this is an additional thing that you can create and say, okay, here's some problems we're trying to solve in the end game for the organization. And for them to make it like a, you know, within colleges, you have different clubs and things that you're a part of. So I love these task forces, whether it's innovation or, you know, right now there's a lot of talk around diversity and inclusion. And so how can we create a task force where it's an organized way to bring their minds and their hearts together to create something that benefits the greater good of the organization? It's about understanding that this generation needs to be heard. They need to know what they're working on matters. So if their day-to-day begins to get mundane, you can invigorate them with these types of activities. And it's not just a volunteer day. it is something bigger than that, where they can feel like they're a part of something. And they don't make these task forces big, because then it's becoming just another team you have to lead. Keep them as, you know, I call them pods, which means three. And I said, we're not a circle of trust, we're a triangle of trust. So it can get lopsided real quick. So everybody plays a really good role. And so those are how I tend to go about really leveraging their appetite for growth, for impact, and the technological world, and giving them the opportunity to get together and be the teacher. And I say, okay, you know, and I like to joke, I say, okay, boss, teach me. And I sit back and they have to present. And it's great, because I have so much on my brain and my shoulders as a CEO. It feels good to sit back and be the student, allow this person to perfect their public speaking, their research skills. And in that moment, I get to show up as the sage and say, this is great, thank you. Here's how we can do it better. Here's what we're going to build on. And then that respect grows, and they see, oh, now I know why she's the boss.
You know, I love that, because, you know, I think what I'm hearing, Sahar, is the idea, because that's a win-win strategy, right? Because everybody tend to win that way. And I think you can retain the best of their best, because now those individuals feel engaged, they feel heard, right? And everybody's having a part to play. So I think that increases one of the things that many companies want to do, is retain their best people. They want to increase engagement and productivity. That prescription you just gave will allow that company to experience all of those things at the same time with lower toxicity, which I think, I love that. So thank you for sharing that, because that is a great strategy for a win for a company, a person who's listening right now and really enjoying this presentation that you're giving. So you wrote a book that Find Your Voice. What was it that led you to write that book, and who's that book for? How did that come about?
That book is for my mama, and how her voice was truly robbed. She used to be a programmer at IBM, and the revolution happened, and she couldn't work for being a woman. So I think that fire and that momentum has really been based on what I've always wanted for her and what I've seen her strive so hard for. Mm-hmm. How I got to writing a book is, that one day when Kimberly gave me the call and said, sorry, Sahar, your job's been dissolved. It's 2008. I was in New York City, and here I go. How am I going to survive? So I tumbled for freelancing for about 18 months, and then I decided I'm going to do what I've always planned to do. So Kimberly was I was going to be working the business side of fashion, and my goal was to work to the top and start a nonprofit. I said, I'm just going to go ahead and write those programs now. And they were the business of fashion programs. The most popular one was Fashion Magazine. So I would take Brooklyn high school students Tuesdays and Thursdays. They weren't going to school. They were coming with me. We were going across the bridge to Manhattan to interview someone that worked in the fashion industry. And this way they were able to look eye to eye with the person that they weren't sure that, do I belong here, you know, before they wrote their story. I wanted to let them know that this is an opportunity for them. And so they got to write and design, and they got school credit, and it was amazing. Did that for 4 years, but I realized, okay, GPA's better, attendance better, going off to college, but when they go, they have the same baggage. They're kind of still like, do I belong here, and timid, and there's this thing, you know? So back to that self-awareness piece. Mm-hmm. So 10 years in New York, 4 years with the nonprofit, I left everything and I moved to Puerto Rico for a year. Ah. And I did that to really barter and move away from the titles and figure out, how can I impact the world? Because I know that's something that is my must. Mm-hmm. But how do I do it in a way that's really the building blocks of change? So did a lot of journaling and bartered for work to survive. And in that revelation came words. Yeah, it was wardrobe is how I started. We all have to get dressed. Mm-hmm. But what I noticed is we get dressed, we show up looking like $1 million bucks. But then when we open our mouth, we are apologizing for who we are almost, you know? And so I wanted women to really find her voice and understand first and foremost that self-talk. Mm-hmm. So it is a course in emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. What's the story you own? What are the decisions you make when you're anxious? These types of questions across all the areas of her life, personally and professionally. So the book is part memoir. I wrote 9 different experiences in my life that shaped my voice. And right after each story is a reflection guide based on cognitive behavior for the reader to understand how do my thoughts mess with my emotions, or how do my emotions mess with my thoughts? And then how do I voice those decisions that ultimately dictate my life personally and professionally?
You know, I think that we're a great your book sounds like something that would be good for even what you described earlier about the CEO or the top echelon and the millennials and coming together and how they can read maybe a story like that and then afterwards reflect on that through the lens of your life, but also then bring into their own personal life, right? So I think it's really good. I'm glad you wrote that book, number one, but also that it has opened doors for you to have spoken at places like, you know, you mentioned for HBO, Facebook, Whole Foods, and so on. So you also have an upcoming summit that will also enable people who have listened to this and what heard a little bit about a teaser about your book and so on, that they could also participate in. So tell us more about that summit.
Okay, we're going to have two full circle moments, Mr. Kingsley. One is, remember when you said, hey, who are you going to give the trophy to?
Yes.
Well, you know, Own Your Voice Summit was born from this place of once upon a time, we couldn't see it, we couldn't be it. But that's changed. We're seeing more men and women, especially of color, in these positions. But what we don't know are the conversations being had to get there, the conversations with ourselves and the conversations with other folks. So back to that whole thing of like, I saw a whole bunch of what I didn't like. Well, I want to show people good stuff, you know, good leaders, good conversations to be had with yourself. And this year, day one, October 19th, and it is free. This is my give back initiative. One of the first speakers is going to be Kimberly Lee Miner, the lady that let me go. And I hired her and I said, listen, we have a 5-day virtual summit. It's about reigniting your revolution. Right now, we're feeling burned out. But at the same time, we've proven how adaptable we can be and how resilient we are in the year of a pandemic. And I explained to her who she was for me and how she really helped me reconnect with my purpose and my voice. And I said, will you come on and give us a talk? And she said, sure. So Own Your Voice Summit is it is about the conversations with yourself and with others. And this year, we're taking that emotional intelligence lens, and we're going to give a lot of stories from women like Kimberly.
And people who are listening right now, if they wanted to know more, they can go to saharpaz.com, right?
Yes.
So the again, it's Sahar, SAHARPAZ.com. You can go and get more information about this summit that's coming up. And if you're listening to this show after October 2020, remember, you can always go back and look at the website and you'll get some follow-up and you'll find out what's happening there. So you're not you're not left out, right? So it's going to happen here in October of 2020. And so I want to mention, as you're listening today, jump on board and hear the good news. You mentioned it's F-R-E-E, free, right? It's loud and proud. It's free. But you're going to get such great value, as you've heard today, even as Sahar has taken time to share with us. And Sahar, we're coming down to the end of our show today. I love some of the things you mentioned, you know, some of the phrases, you know, not, you know, speaking and not spewing, you know, ration your passion, play chess and not checkers. I think, you know, those are so cool because I think it captures for us visually what it is. And I love the opening idea of an orchestra and about leadership. So I think you kind of started us and took us right back around to that very thing. So which is very great as a speaker is really wrapping up what you had started with and did a fantastic job. So we want to say thank you so much for being on the show today and presenting with us. And as we wrap things up here, if there's any one last thing you may want to mention in closing out, you've said so much already. I'm not sure what else could be there, but, you know, as a person, as you, as a speaker and all that, I mean, I'm not sure you may want to say one last thing before we wrap things up here.
Just thank you to you, sir, because the culmination of stories and voices is what changes us as humans and leaders. And I think that, you know, you take time to produce it and put it out. And I want to give you gratitude. Everybody who's listening, thank you, thank you. Make sure you're reviewing Kingsley's podcast and passing it on. There's a lot of good stuff there. And the first step to self-awareness is just when you're feeling those emotions high, whether it's hot, good high or a bad high, just ask yourself, what am I thinking? Understand the tone of voice you take with yourself, and then maybe have some fun with it and name it. Mm. You know, when I went to go write my book, Psychic Phyllis was saying, English is your second language. No one's going to take you serious. Who are you to write a book? Girl, sit down. And I didn't let Psychic Phyllis, you know, I just named her so I can kind of observe her. And those are tricks for self-awareness. And for any leader or any emotionally intelligent leader, that's the first step.
Well said. And if you can't name it, you can't tame it.
That's right, Kingsley. I love it.
Sarah, we could speak all day. I enjoy your passion, your fire, the just everything that came so natural. And so I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us today and presenting so well. And with that said, from the bottom of my heart, but also from the show's, we want to say a big thank you for being here. And there you have it, my friend. You heard so hard today. The passion, the excitement that came through her. She just exuded with what it is she talks about. As you can tell, she lives and breathes this topic, right? Because she's been there. And I love the fact that she framed this in her own upbringing and what drives her. What drives her, and I love the phrase she said, this is something she must do, helping you find your voice so that you can become the best version of yourself as a leader. So I would love to hear, as was Sahar, your takeaway. What is it that was most helpful for you? Would you comment and also ask questions when you see this episode goes up on social media? LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, wherever you are, when you see that, please engage with us. And don't forget, you can reach out to Sahar at saharpaz.com and make sure if you are listening to this episode before October 2020, get on her summit. Get on her summit. If you're listening to the show after 2020, October, you can go back to her website and find out how to access possibly this summit and what's presented there, right? So make sure you go to saharpaz.com. Well, my friend, thank you so very much for taking the time to listen to us and to be here at the Kings of Grand Show. I truly, truly appreciate that. So before we wrap things up, we need to put the show back into the vault. So here we go. Let's put the show back into the vault. Here we go. There it is. Now that the show is put back into the vault at the Immortelligent Leadership Institute, I can safely exit and say my goodbye. With that said, my friend, peace out, God bless, and I'll see you on the flip side. Yeah.